Selling. The process of selling a property involves many considerations. Even if you are selling through a real estate agent, there is still much to do, from preparing the property, choosing and managing the agent, through to negotiating offers and settlement. These are all discussed in more detail below. In reality, you should be thinking about your sales campaign before you even buy the property. By thinking about the selling story and how you would promote the property for sale before you have even purchased it forces you to actually look at the property from a completely different perspective. You are accounting for your own wants list, but are also looking at how many boxes you can tick that would make the property appealing for others. For example, near transport, infrastructure, services, jobs, lifestyle areas. That way, the property will appeal to a broader market come sale time, and that is what will generate demand and hence a more successful sales process. Conversely, a very niche or unique property, or one that has lots of constraints, which you may be happy to accommodate, may in fact impact on your capacity to sell in the future. For example, you may be happy if the street floods, and every now and again, you are flooded in. Or maybe you are happy with the one-bedroom dilapidated shack up the top of a very steep hill on a large area of land a long way from anywhere. Or maybe a property with multiple easements on it. Just be clear, though, that many people will not be prepared to accept these characteristics, and hence these types of properties may be harder to sell when the time comes. The important thing is that you have thought about it from this perspective before you go ahead and purchase it, especially if you are looking to sell it in the short term. When to sell. No one has a crystal ball to know when the perfect time to sell a property is. It is also unrealistic to think that we can pick the peak of the market. There are, however, a number of factors to consider that can impact on when is the best time to sell, as outlined below. The property cycle. Over a period of time, property moves through cycles based on supply and demand fundamentals affected by demographic, economic, and emotional factors. The cycles include 1. Slow down, slowing market, declining prices off the peak of the market. 2. Slump, stagnant, falling market, flat prices leading to the bottom of the market. And 3. Recovery or rising market, slow increase in prices coming off the bottom of the market. And 4. Boom, sharply increasing prices approaching the peak of the market. While the ideal time to sell is towards the peak of the market, in reality, the boom time may only occur in 1 to 3 years out of, say, 10 to 12 years, and the peak may only last for a month or two over this period. And it's only obvious in hindsight, reviewing the data. Therefore, for the vast majority of the time, when you are looking to sell, the cycle will not be in this most ideal phase. You may not be in a position to wait for years to put your property on the market, and therefore it's important just to understand which part of the property cycle the property is in, so that your expectations are in line with this. For example, it may be unrealistic to ask a premium price for your property and expect it to sell in record time in a falling, stagnant market. Leading indicators. There are a number of indicators that can give you a heads up on where the cycle for an area is heading. The price trend itself is one indicator. Obviously, if the price trend is on the increase, then demand would appear to be outstripping supply, and hence properties are selling for more. Conversely, if the trend is in decline, then properties are selling for less, and your expectations need to be consistent with this. Another indicator is days on the market. When days on the market is trending upwards, and properties are staying on the market for longer, hence demand is weakening, prices tend to be in decline. On the flip side, if days on the market is declining and properties are starting to sell quickly and hence demand is outstripping supply, this is a great indicator that prices are about to increase if they have not yet already begun to do so. In fact, there can be several months of lag between falling days on the market and price increases, and so keeping abreast of the trend is important when looking to sell. Seasonality. In many locations, the season or the time of the year can affect buyer demand and hence the best time to sell to optimise your chances of a sale. For example, in southern states, winter tends to be the least favourable season to sell because it's cold and often wet and not so conducive to people being out and about looking to buy. Conversely, spring is often the most ideal. In northern Australia, though, the wet season may be the least ideal period to sell. you need to discuss the timing of year with local real estate agents in your location to understand the impact of seasons. You may not be in a position to wait for the ideal season to sell your property, and that is just the reality for you. But you do need to know where you are with regard to timing and possibly temper your expectations accordingly, depending on how quick a sale you require. Christmas period. There are pros and cons with selling property over the Christmas period. People are more excited on holidays and have more time to look or search the internet for properties. Plus, they may be more inclined to buy on impulse. Conversely, many people have buyer fatigue after the lead-up to Christmas. Plus, having been looking for property since spring, they may be getting frustrated, and this may work for or against you. Also, many real estate agents close over Christmas, and so access may be an issue. Banks and finance brokers may be less accessible, further complicating the process for buyers. Once again, these are questions that you need to ask the local agents so as to understand the magnitude of this effect in the locality of the property you are trying to sell. Competition. Doing your research and accounting for potential competition in the market is important. While there may not be many properties currently for sale, you need to look at what is coming through the market and its timing. For example, if from your research you know that there will be an influx of new properties in the future due to large developments occurring or major infrastructure projects happening, then that will affect the timing of your sale, and in fact you may choose to sell sooner rather than later to try to avoid the competition. An example of this is the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games and the construction of the significant amount of accommodation for the athletes. If you own a property in the vicinity of the Games area and are considering selling, then you should be closely researching the sale timing and whether it would be better to sell sooner rather than later to avoid the competition and potential oversupply of property in the area post-games, even though rental will be at a premium over the duration of the games. Tax implications. Depending on the length of time that you have owned the property, you should discuss the timing of the sale with your accountant to ensure that you do not miss out on any tax advantages. For example, if you own the property in a trust structure and sell after owning the property for more than 12 months, you would be eligible for the 50% capital gains tax exemption. Hence, timing the sale to take advantage of this would be smart business, assuming that the tax implications are sizable. Remember, though, to confirm with the accountant that the 12 months is contract date to contract date, not settlements dates, because this makes a big difference. Also, if you built the property from scratch and then sell after 5 years, then there is potentially no GST payable on the sale. You would not want to sell after 4¾ years just because you are not aware of this ruling, and your accountant would be able to advise you of this. Opportunity cost analysis. The decision to sell a property and the timing of this should also be assessed based on opportunity cost analysis. This takes into account the cash flow from the property, assuming it's a rental, the capital growth forecast for the location, the amount of equity tied up in the property, and the potential to access this equity through refinancing. Both the cash flow and equity position need to be looked at in the context of your income and available equity position, because for one person, a property that is $1,000 per year negative cash flow may be insignificant relative to their income and capacity to save, and may have no impact on their serviceability. For another person, though, this $1,000 may make or break their capacity to do another deal. Similarly, a property that quarantines $40,000 may be the difference in being able to do another deal if they are very tight on available equity, but for the next person, this may be insignificant in the whole scheme of things. The capacity to further develop the property also needs to be taken into consideration, and you should be making the decision to sell in full light of the potential of the property. Even if it's not for you to capitalize on this development potential yourself, it's important to emphasize this in the marketing material when selling the property. Presenting the property for sale. Having decided to sell a property, you then need to present the property to its maximum potential in order to get a premium price for it, and or sell the property as quickly as possible. There are a number of techniques used to present the property at its best from a physical inspection perspective, like staging through to actual online presentation. Property staging. Property staging is the process of presenting a property to its full potential, While it may appear to be a trendy thing to do and a more recent industry in the market, in reality, staging covers a broad spectrum of activities, many of which have been around for a very long time. The simplest form of staging is to just give the property a very good clean, inside and out. You will be amazed at the difference clean windows can make. Even consider bringing in a professional cleaner to really give it the once over. Conducting basic repairs and maintenance would also fall into this category, as would tidying up the yard. Remember that first impressions count, and a little bit of gardening and mulching can make a big difference. The next level would be to declutter the space, to make it less busy and to make it feel more spacious and even more light and airy. Yes, this may mean moving some bulky furniture out or clearing the spare room and renting a storage shed for a period. Removing personal effects from the property is also very important because you want the prospective buyer to be able to imagine themselves in the property and not be distracted or in fact be made to feel uncomfortable because of your family photos everywhere. The next level of staging would be to style your current furnishings and introduce some decorating or styling items like cushions, throws, bed linen, artwork, plants, new towels, etc. The ultimate form of staging is to remove all effects and start with a blank canvas and bring in all new furniture, decor and styling pieces down to the books on the coffee table and even a dinner setting on the dining table. Depending on your budget, time availability, experience and decorating flair, you may choose to stage a property yourself or pay a professional stager. You can also choose to hire the furniture and furnishings, or you can buy them and reuse them from project to project, storing in between. Do your research on the cost of staging, what your property requires, and what the market expects, and do not underestimate the impact staging can have when selling a property. Professional photography. The quality of the photographs taken of a property to use in the sales marketing campaign can make or break the selling result. Even if your real estate agent says they are a great photographer or they have a whiz-bang camera and says that you don't need professional photos, do not rely on their happy snaps. Always get professional photographs, even for a very basic property. You want yours to stand out, and if everybody else has just gone with the local agent's photos, then yours will jump out simply because they are professional. A professional photographer accounts for the composition of the photo, the lighting, the angle, etc. Talk to the photographer regarding daylight versus dusk photos. Stand across the road and look at the property objectively and take note of what you might see through the windows, whether some lights are on or off, whether some blinds are up or down, whether a plant in the front yard has brown fronds. Remember, first impressions count. Also, don't underestimate the impact that plant greenery can have in a photo, both with inside and outside photos. Even consider buying some plants and palms that you can move around from room to room when photographing. Even a palm outside a blank window can really lift a photo and distract the eye in a positive way. You should then select the photos that are used in the marketing campaign and which is your money shot for the feature photo used in your marketing. Remember that you do not have to include every professional photo you got back from the photographer. Just select those that portray the property in the best light. For example, if the dining room photo makes the space look a bit small and cramped, do not include it. If the photo doesn't show the best features of the property, don't use it. Another consideration is when there is value in getting an elevated photo or pole photo of the property. This is where they raise the camera to a height where they can photograph the property and the surrounding area, hence showing its proximity to water or the shopping precinct or CBD or whatever. Floor and site plans. Having floor plans and a site plan produced for the property can assist in presenting and marketing, as it gives the buyer much more insight into the layout and flow of the property. Many of the professional photographers are able to produce these plans and at an economic rate. You do not need to go to the extent of having a draftsperson draw them up because they don't need to be 100% to scale. Video. The next level of presentation for a property is to have a video produced for online marketing. Once again, research the market and decide whether a video is required to compete with other comparable properties on the market or justified to make your property stand out. Selling with a tenant in place. When a property is being sold with a tenant in place, this can impact on the freedom you have to maximise the presentation of the property. In reality, this is the tenant's home and they have to live there, so you need to be mindful of what you can realistically expect from them. In saying that though, you can always offer them incentives to keep the property tidy or to go out when the open home is on. Maybe give them weekly movie tickets so that they can go to the movies during the open inspection time, or offer a discount on their rent or a weekend away for them to keep the place tidy during the marketing period. Alternatively, some tenants may be very happy for you to temporarily remove their furniture and stage the property for a period, just as long as you are prepared for some potential wear and tear, given that they will be using the furniture in between. Obviously, you need to assess the type of tenant and their willingness to work with you in this regard. Selling method. When selling a property, there are a number of different sale methods to choose from, depending on whether you are selling privately or through a real estate agent, as outlined below. Private sale. Choosing to privately list your property for sale means that you will be taking on all of the roles of marketing the property, including taking inquiries, conducting inspections, negotiating offers, and coordinating the contract aspects of the sale. Depending on the inquiry level on the property, this may be a significant amount of work, or conversely, the first interested party may buy it. Either way, you need the time to dedicate to the process and have the confidence to pull it off. People generally choose to sell privately either because they want to save money on the commission payable to an agent, or they have become disenchanted with real estate agents and figure they could do a better job. While the money reason may be valid, it may be false economy, because in the business of property, there are many opportunities to save money by doing things yourself, from the renovation to owner-builder to property management to conveyancing, and the list goes on. What is the most limited commodity, though, is time. And by taking on all these tasks yourself, time will potentially become a problem, and you in fact may become the weakest link in your own process because you are trying to do too much. The alternative is to utilize your time effectively and leverage it by outsourcing with you managing your team rather than being a one-man band. Really look at your motives if you are considering being a private seller, ensure that it is the best use of your time. If the issue is that you do not have confidence in real estate agents, then this needs to be addressed by doing your due diligence up front, asking the right questions, selecting the right agent, and managing them accordingly, as detailed below in this module. If you still decide you want to sell privately, there are many websites dedicated to the sale of properties by owners, including noagentproperty.com.au, buymyplace.com.au, owner.com.au, ForsaleByOwner.com, etc. Other general websites like Gumtree, Trading Post, and eBay also have privately listed property advertised. The benefit of privately selling is that you are dealing directly with the purchaser and hence decision making, which is in some instances can make the negotiation easier because you can identify their needs and work with that. Certainly, the skills of negotiation detailed further in this module come to the forefront in a private sale situation. Real estate agent sale. When selling through a real estate agent, there are a number of decisions to be made, and the primary one is deciding on the type of listing you are entering into. For example, exclusive, sole agent, or open listing. Each has its advantages and disadvantages as detailed below. Exclusive listing. This is where you are giving the one agent exclusivity to the listing, meaning they are the only agent marketing the property. Even you, the owner, can't sell the property, or if you do, you will still be required to pay the agent commission. Most agents prefer this type of listing because it means that if they put the effort into the property, then they will reap the rewards from the sale. Essentially, they are not competing with other agents and know that they will get the full commission from the sale. If you have full confidence in the agent, then an exclusive listing is generally the way to go, because an agent tends to be more focused on their exclusive listings and puts the more effort into them. Open listing. This is the opposite of an exclusive listing, in that an open listing is where you can have multiple agents working to sell your property. It means that you can sign up multiple agents, each on an open listing basis. While this might seem advantageous from our perspective as a seller, because you have multiple people trying to sell it, in reality, however, agents tend to give less attention to their open listings because they know there are other agents marketing them, and so there is the possibility that they put significant time into pushing the sale only for another agent to sell it out from under them. This is why agents tend to focus on their exclusive listings as a priority, and only if they have a buyer that isn't interested in their exclusive stock will they then push their open listing stock. In the end, it can turn out that while you may have numerous agents with the listing, in fact, no one is really pushing it because they each figure that someone else is. An alternative to this situation is where you have a joint listing where two agents are working together on it. Maybe they are from different parts of town or have different clientele. They each know the other has it listed, but being only the two of them, they are more motivated to push the property than if there were half a dozen agents. Sole listing. This is very similar to an exclusive listing in that there is only one agent involved. However, it also gives you, the owner, the right to sell the property. If you do sell it, no commission is payable to the agent. You would consider this type of listing if you have already started to market the property to your own network, or you plan to. Maybe they are family, friends, and acquaintances. Either way, you are putting in efforts to get the property sold through your own endeavours. For sale, tender, expression of interest, auction campaign. Another major decision that needs to be made is whether you sell the property based on a for sale campaign, a tender campaign, or an auction. For sale. A property listed for sale simply means that offers will be considered from day one. There is no set end date to the sale campaign, and typically a list price or a price range has been set. This is the standard mode of selling a property. All terms of the sale are negotiable, and the buyer typically submits their offer, which may include conditions that first need to be satisfied before the property goes unconditional. Tender or expression of interest. A property marketed for tender or expression of interest is typically advertised with a set end date by which all submissions need to be lodged with the agent based on the buyer's best price and contract terms. The property will not be advertised with a price and generally will not be sold prior to the cut-off date. All submissions are reviewed by the seller post the due date and they will choose to negotiate with the preferred buyer. This method is more common for larger sites, development sites, or larger commercial property. An information of memorandum would typically be compiled by the agent to promote the features and opportunities of the site. This method is less common for a standard residential property being sold. Auction. A property being sold based on an auction campaign would have exclusivity with the listing agent. A date is set in the future for the auction, typically a month in advance, which means a very targeted marketing campaign is entered into for that period to give maximum exposure to the property. There is no list price, and that is what is determined on the day of the auction. The seller sets the auction terms, which are typically 10% deposit on the fall of the auction hammer, and generally a short settlement period of 30 or 60 days. If the seller is willing, though, they can negotiate on these terms. For example, registered bidders could negotiate prior to auction for a longer settlement period. A sale under auction terms, though, is unconditional. This last point is very important because it means that the property sold at auction is unconditional, which is great for the seller. From the buyer's perspective, however, it means that they need to do all of their due diligence ahead of the auction. This means they may need to get a building and pest inspection done, legal searches, finance pre-approval, and even a bank valuation potentially already completed by auction day. For this reason, many people are not in a position to buy under auction terms, and you need to be aware that you may be reducing your pool of buyers by going to auction. The ultimate situation with an auction is where you have multiple parties bidding against each other and pushing the price higher. Certainly, if they are emotional buyers, this can result in the property selling for a premium. If there is only one bidder, though, or no bidders, then obviously the auction result can be quite different and the property may get passed in. It is not a lost cause at this point, though, because many properties are sold within a relatively short period of time post-auction. The advantage of an auction is that it does give a focal point in time for buyers to work towards and thus creates a level of urgency in the process, which does not generally exist when the property is simply listed for sale. As a seller, you can have it both ways, though, and market the property under an auction campaign, but be very clear to the agent that you will consider offers prior to auction. This will cost you more, though, in marketing, because with an auction, the marketing budget is usually spent over a short period of time to give the property maximum exposure leading to up to the auction date. Also, there will be a fee for the auctioneer, because often this is a specialist auctioneer, not the listing agent. A final note on auctions is to research the market and understand if auctions are common or not in that market. For example, in Melbourne, auctions are very common and a very standard way of selling property. In contrast, Brisbane is less fixated on auctions, and while lots of properties do get sold at auction, more are sold under standard contract terms. Selling off the plan. When selling off the plan, you are actually selling something that does not yet exist. It may be a vacant block of land that has not yet fully been subdivided, or it may be a unit or apartment that has not yet been developed, or it might even be a standard house that has not yet been built. In all cases, the buyer is purchasing based on the details shown on the plans and in the supporting documents, hence the reference to off the plan. A pre-sale is another term for selling off the plan. From a seller's perspective, selling off the plan can be a great opportunity because it allows you to lock in sales before you have had to commit 100% of resources to the project. Hence, it's a strategy to de-risk the project, because if you can lock in sales before construction, for example, then you have the confidence to progress with the deal. For this reason, banks lending on commercial projects of, say, 4 dwellings or 4 blocks of land or larger may require pre-sales in place prior to giving unconditional finance. Selling off the plan is also a great strategy to be able to start marketing a property for sale and lock in contracts prior to titles being issued because of the ability to utilise subject to title registration conditions. There are many aspects to selling off the plan, and it could almost be a module all on its own. However, below are details some of the key considerations. Marketing agent. Properties being sold off the plan are often sold through specialist marketing agents rather than the local real estate agent. That's not to say that the local agent may not be able to. It's just that many will choose not to because it is a specialist field. See the marketing section under buying methods earlier in this module. An important note to make, though, is that marketers typically charge significantly higher commission than a standard real estate agent, anywhere from 3 to 5% plus. Disclosure statement and contract. In order to sell a property off the plan, a significant amount of documentation is involved in the form of a disclosure statement, in addition to the contract, which itself is very specific to the deal. The disclosure statement details particulars of the contract. It includes the full plan set of the property being sold, if it's not yet built, including, for example, the site plan, floor plan, elevations, landscape plan, plus the fixtures and finishes of the build, right down to the paint colour on the walls, inside and out. It includes the draft survey plan, and if the property is being strata titled, it also includes the draft community management statement, annual budget, schedule of contributions, right down to a copy of the body corporate manager's administration agreement document. These documents should be prepared by a solicitor prior to marketing the property for sale, and do not underestimate the time required to compile this information, particularly when the property is being strata titled and a body corporate is involved. The contract will accompany the disclosure document and will include all the relevant terms of the contract that were negotiated between the buyer and seller, including purchase price, deposit amount, etc. Special conditions will be prepared by the seller's solicitor, though, to accommodate the off-the-plan nature of the sale, including the subject-to-title clause. It is also likely to include a sunset clause that details a set date in the future by which the developer has to deliver the project to completion. If the developer fails to meet this time frame, either party, the seller or the buyer, has the right to terminate the sale contract. An example of this may be if the developer were unable to secure finance and was not able to proceed with the project, then they would be able to use this clause to terminate the contract. The buyer's deposit would be fully refunded at that point. Clearly, the seller's solicitor is integral in the preparation of the sale contract rather than in the normal situation where the real estate agent prepares the contract. This certainly adds to the cost of this strategy and needs to be factored into the feasibility. Expression of interest. When selling off the plan, a purchaser would typically lodge their interest to purchase via an expression of interest form. The form details the buyer's information and purchasing entity, the property they want to purchase, and the terms they are offering, including purchase price, deposit, special conditions, etc. The details of the expressions of interest are used by the solicitor to prepare the sale contract. A holding deposit is paid with the expressions of interest and effectively puts the property on hold while the contract is being prepared and signed. Marketing material. When selling off the plan, extra effort goes into preparing the marketing material because in effect you are selling a property off a brochure given that it doesn't yet exist. The brochure is typically called an information memorandum. Artist impressions of the project are essential so that the buyer can get a feel for the look of the property. Quality written information is critical as it can make or break a deal and should include specific information about the property, the area, the facilities, the lifestyle characteristics, even down to the types of buyers. Understanding who your target audience is and whether it's owner-occupiers, investors or both is also very important as it will influence the marketing material. For example, for investors, you would include rental appraisals, cash flow analysis, tenant profiles, etc. Developer sales. Depending on the state regulations, there may be an opportunity for you, the developer, to sell a number of your own development properties in any given year. For example, 6 in Queensland in any 12-month period. Once again, this is managed through the solicitor and needs to be discussed in advance. Selecting a real estate agent. Selecting the right real estate agent is certainly not a 5-minute exercise. It requires research and due diligence, just like buying a property or engaging any member of your team. The wrong decision and the wrong agent can cause delays and loss of money, not to mention serious frustration and stress at your end. So choose carefully as per the details below. As a cautionary note, do not choose an agent because they are your best friend or a friend of a friend, or they are just starting their business and you feel you should support them. This is business and needs to be treated as such. Researching agents. There are a number of ways to research real estate agents, and it is a combination of them all that will inform a good decision. Determining who is the top selling agency and then individual agent in the location of the property is a great start. It's important that the agent is local to the area of the property or at least specialising in that area. That's because they themselves will be an area expert and will understand the local market intimately and be able to advise you accordingly. Also, they should have an existing database of clients and prospective buyers interested in that area. They will also have purchasers looking at their other listings in the area, and a good agent will leverage off these inquiries and move them onto your property if it's suitable. Remember that there are specialist agents too, depending on the product you are selling. For example, tourism, commercial, rural properties, acreage, and waterfront specialist agents. There are websites that will provide you recommendations of the top selling agents in your area. Certainly go through this process, but be mindful that the ratings are typically based on client feedback, and some agents are much more proactive in getting their clients to provide feedback. That in itself isn't a bad thing. At least they are being proactive. As with all data, though, consider the quality of the data and what bias may exist. Also, look through the sold listings on real estate websites like realestate.com and note the agent or agents with the most sales. Again, this data may be biased because the agents choose to put the sold listings up and some are very proactive in promoting themselves while others are not. It's not uncommon for a really good agent to not necessarily be reflected as such on the internet research because they are too busy selling properties rather than promoting themselves. This is why we need to take a multi-pronged approach to our research and not just rely on one source. Review the recent sold listings over, say, the last 6 months on data sources like RP Data or PDS Live, Pricefinder, or Investar's My Valuer. Certainly, if there are one or two key agents selling most properties in the area, then they should be on your shortlist to interview. Plus, there is always word of mouth recommendations from others, be it the local hairdresser, information centre, or owner of the local hardware. Business owners know who is who in their local area, and it's worth asking around. Remember that the agent that you bought the property from may not be the best agent to sell with. Once you have done the above research, hopefully there will be 3 or 4 agents that stick out and whose names keep popping up, or if the location is relatively small, then maybe it will only be a couple of agents. At this point, you should shortlist the top three agents and then review a number of their listings for sale. Read the internet marketing material to get a feel for their ads. If they are uninspiring and just regurgitate the same information that the property is three bedrooms, two bathrooms, open plan living, has built-ins and fans plus double lock-up garage, that's not a great sign and doesn't instill a lot of confidence. Even though they may say that they don't write their own ads, the fact that they are prepared to use this type of copy is a worry and shows a lack of creativity. It's not that we are relying on the agent to write the written copy, as you will see later in this module, but we do want someone with a bit of flair. Yes, in this instance, we do want someone that could sell ice to an Eskimo, but not in an arrogant, pushy, used car salesman type of manner, rather in a confident, respectful, genuine, make-it-happen type of way. Interviewing agents. For the two or three shortlisted agents, the next stage is to interview them. If you are local, this definitely should be a face-to-face meeting and preferably at the property. It's beneficial to be at the property because the agent can come prepared with information and can inspect the property at the same time and provide their view on marketing it. If you are not local to the property, then an over-the-phone interview will do. In saying that, though, a video conference call or Skype call would be even better because then you can observe their facial expressions and body language, which can be very insightful. For example, if they seem distracted, preoccupied, aloof, and somewhat uninterested, then that's not a great start. Below is a list of questions to ask the agent during the meeting. How many properties do you have on exclusive listing and open listing? We are asking this because we don't want the agent selling, marketing too many properties. Otherwise, they won't be able to focus on yours. Also, if they have lots of properties, then they are not reliant on selling yours to put food on the table. What is their present success rate with selling? For example, 90% versus 20%. What's their average sale time frame? For example, days on the market. And how does that compare to the area average? Obviously, the quicker the better, and less than the average is better too. What's their average discounting rate versus the market average? Remember that discounting is the percent difference between list price and sold price. For example, 1% discounting is where the property sells for 1% less than its list price. Obviously, 1% is much better than 10% discounting. Will they negotiate on their sales commission? An agent that easily buckles and will negotiate on their own commission does not necessarily give us a lot of confidence. The reason for this is that if they are so readily negotiable on their own rate, does that mean they will negotiate quickly on the sale price when a buyer asks them? This is not a good sign of a strong negotiator. Even if they would negotiate on their commission, it's not recommended that you follow through with this because with lower commission, they will be less motivated to work on your sale versus the next sale where they are getting full commission. A way around this is to wait until you get an offer and in the negotiation process, test if the agent will negotiate on their commission to get the deal over the line. Do they do open homes or private inspections during the week? You may be surprised to know that some agents will only do open homes and not private inspections. They say it's because they want buyers to be in the property when there are others there in order to create urgency and a feeling of demand. Being cynical, though, this strategy is more for the agent's benefit because they control their week and because they can get cross-marketing with other properties that they are selling. Instead, the agent needs to have the attitude of doing whatever it takes to get a sale, and that includes meeting the market and allowing people to inspect on demand to fit in with their schedule too. Remember that not everyone can inspect on weekends. Is the agent the one at the open homes or is it their assistant? You would be surprised how many agents, particularly in the more metro areas, have assistants, and they are the ones that open for inspections. Yes, the agent will be working, but maybe they have multiple opens and spread their resources. Obviously, if we are choosing the sales agent based on their selling skills, then we want them there at the opens. Do they also market to the real estate agency's rental database of owners and tenants? For example, existing tenants may be looking to buy, and existing investors may be looking to expand their portfolio in the area. you want an agent that leaves no stone unturned. Is your property in the average price range of what they sell? This is an important question because if your property is the most expensive on their books, then that's less desirable because you will not benefit from cross-marketing to your property from their other ads for other comparable properties. If your property is a comparable price, then inquiries on other properties can be redirected to your property too, if appropriate. Also, we want the agent to have an existing database of potential purchasers looking in the price range of your property. Do they market on social media like Facebook and Twitter? Obviously, the broader their reach to the market, the better. How would they market the property? For example, newspaper advertising, internet advertising, window advertising, signboard, etc. Ensure the agent can justify with statistics why they are making these recommendations, especially if it includes expensive newspaper ads, because they can be over $1,000 plus per ad in some locations. You don't want to be the one paying for the agent to just promote themselves and create greater exposure for themselves by doing the ads, when in reality the statistics in that area may not support sales leads coming from newspaper advertising. Do they recommend selling by auction? If so, do they advocate an on-site auction or an in-room auction that is conducted in an office or community space somewhere else? Be wary of an agent promoting an in-room auction conducted off-site because they tend to be much more sterile and unemotional and can use only photos to promote the property, which are never as good as the real thing in most cases. How long will it take for them to prepare the marketing material and get the property on the market? Time is money. What are their fees and charges, and will they pay for advertising? What do they charge for a realestate.com listing? This cost can vary significantly between agents, depending on the volume of advertising that the agency does. Negotiate on this and highlight the price charged by other agents. Will they conjunct with other agents? Conjuncting means that if another agent brings a buyer to the table that purchases the property, the principal agent will share the commission with the other agent. Obviously, this is very beneficial from the seller's perspective, but not all agents will do it. In their opinion, who is the type of buyer for this property? You want to gauge if their assessment is consistent with your research. What features of the property would they highlight? You want an agent that can identify the features. For example, the ducted air conditioning controlled from downstairs is a benefit if there is a baby or child sleeping upstairs. The separate pathway and entry ensures privacy to the unit. If the agent doesn't come up with much and you have to highlight to them all the features, that's not a great start. What price would they consider listing the property for? While you want a premium price, do not fall into the trap of just going with the agent that projects the highest price, especially when it's above your comparable sales research. This is because the agent may be just trying to buy your listing and tell you what they think you want to hear. Their strategy is to condition you as a seller, which means once they have your listing and there is not initial interest, they then report that the market has softened since they first inspected the property, and they will want you to reduce the asking price to the level where it should have been from the outset. Selling agent agreement. Once you have selected your preferred selling agent based on your research, you will then enter into a selling agent agreement. See Module 7 for details about this type of agreement. It is recommended that you only sign up the agent for a limited duration, for example 45 days, rather than the normal 90 days that the agent would probably have pre-filled out on the agreement. You want to do this because if the agent isn't performing to your satisfaction, you want to be able to terminate the agreement as soon as possible and not have to wait 3 months. While the agent may try to resist this shorter period, you can easily explain to them that it will have no bearing as long as they are doing a great job, because at that point, obviously, you will want to extend the contract if required. It only becomes an issue if they don't do what they say they would do. An agent that backs themselves shouldn't have an issue with this. You can explain to them that you have had a bad experience in the past with an agent who, once they got the listing, was inactive, a poor negotiator, and poor communicator. This way, you are effectively putting the agent on notice as to your expectations. Educating the agent. Take the time to think about and list any potential issues buyers may have with the property and list possible responses and ways to counter the issue. Equip the agent with this information so that they are prepared to be able to address buyers' issues and concerns up front. You want the agent to address things front on, not be vague and dismissive, because that can make or break a sale. Putting a buyer at ease regarding concerns is very important. You are therefore much better to be prepared in this regard and prepare the agent, rather than stick your head in the sand and ignore it. Think about how you can turn anything potentially negative into a positive. For example, if the property is in a flood zone, you should highlight to the agent that in fact the water has only ever got to the back fence and never onto the property, and that the road access has never been cut off. That way, the agent can relay this info and alleviate any buyer's concerns on the spot. Or maybe there is a larger area of vacant land next door, and buyers are concerned that they will lose their privacy if building works begin. Maybe you could counter that by highlighting that there is a buffer corridor between this property and the next. Plus, if development does happen, then it could significantly increase the value of this property because they would all be brand new homes and at a much higher price point, etc. Remember that you know your property and the area the best, and so you are the best equipped to prepare these responses. You also have the most at stake, and yes, some people might say that this is the real estate agent's job, but at the end of the day, you want the sale, and so you need to be prepared to do whatever it takes to make that happen. Agent feedback and communication. Be very clear with the agent from the outset as to what your expectations are regarding communication. You should expect to get an update from the agent at least weekly, including statistics on the number of inquiries, number of inspections, outcome of inspections, and feedback on the property, both from the buyer's perspective and the agent's. Take the feedback on board and look for ways to remedy or address them. Pricing property for sale. Pricing a property competitively in the market is critical because if it's set too high and buyer interest is low, the listing can become stale. Certainly, the longer it is on the market, the less appealing it tends to become, because people have already seen it and just gloss over it. People may think there must be something wrong with it because it hasn't yet sold. Detail below are some of the factors to consider regarding pricing a property. Remember that there may have been a long time gap from when you did your initial pricing research, and so revisit this as per below. Research comparable sales. You need to benchmark your property against everything else that has sold in the area recently, say in the last 3 to 6 months. Research sold properties on realestate.com and from RP Data or Pricefinder or My Valuer on Investar. Remember that the data from these last three sources may be up to 3 months behind the current market. Summarize in a table format each sold property, price, features, include photos and compare it with your property. For example, land size, house size and features, views, location to infrastructure, cafes, jobs, transport, private school, school zone, lifestyle areas, main road, quiet street, etc. Be objective when comparing your property with others. Research for sale properties. Repeat the process above to benchmark your property against other comparable properties currently listed on the market for sale. Even call the agents to get their feedback on how the property is going and the level of inquiries and interest. Research the strength of the current market. You need to understand the current market conditions, because in a strong moving market, you may choose a different list price and advertising strategy. For example, you may choose to go offers over X dollars, rather than specifying a specific price. Research the current days on the market, the days on the market trend, the discounting rate and trend, and the inquiry level experienced by the local agents. Setting a price. Once you have obtained the agent's feedback on price and compared it with your research, you both, you and the agent, then need to agree on a price point. From there, you then need to decide if you will advertise the actual list price or a price range or make it offers over X dollars or make an offer and hence no price indication. The method that you choose is up to you, but keep in mind that some buyers get very annoyed when no price is provided. For example, they don't know if it's a $400,000 range or a $500,000 range, and there is a very big difference. You will find that many agents don't like listing a price, but rather want a prospective buyer to call them to inquire. You have to ask the question, though, whether this is just a tactic that works for the agent, because by encouraging someone to call, they can then try to move them onto another property if this one isn't right for them. You need to be very mindful of whose interests the agent has at the forefront, yours or theirs. Also remember that if you provide a price range, buyers will always start at the low end. It's just human nature. If you are serious about selling and you know what price you are targeting, why not just advertise it with a price and get on with it? Marketing. Effective marketing of a property is essential in a selling process. In fact, it is so important that when you are looking to purchase a property, you should actually be thinking about how you can market it for sale, even though you may not be intending to sell in the short term. That way, you are thinking about the end game from the outset, and it will assist you to make better decisions at the outset. What you are wanting is a property that ticks as many of the boxes as possible, either as an investment property or an owner-occupied property. Some of these boxes to be ticked include if it's close to transport, education, jobs, lifestyle areas like cafes or parks, or maybe if it's in a quiet street, etc. A property that fits those criteria will be very marketable because you can highlight all of those features in the marketing material, and that's what sells property. You need to provide a product that people want to buy. A number of the different aspects to marketing have been touched on above, but are outlined in more detail below. Writing copy. Written copy is the wording that is used in all of the marketing material, including the brochure, internet ad, signboard, etc. The whole idea of the copy is to sell the sizzle. You want the words to really capture people's attention and interest. The words should not be the usual boring three bedrooms with ensuite and open plan living type ad. That is just describing what it is. It's describing the features, whereas we want to describe the lifestyle created. Let's face it, the symbols used at the top of most ads usually tell the buyer the number of bedrooms, bathrooms, and garages. You need to use the words much more creatively. The idea is to evoke emotion and focus on what it feels like to live in the property. Be emotive so that the buyer can imagine themselves experiencing what you have described in writing. Use descriptions like, imagine coming home and relaxing on the expansive rear veranda with a glass of wine in hand, or enjoy playing footy with the kids in the huge, fully fenced backyard. This is where it is important to know who your target market is, who you are actually trying to sell to, because you need to target your written copy accordingly. If your target isn't families, then don't mention the kids in the rear yard, for example. Also, remember that photos will accompany the words, and so in your written copy, don't just describe what you can already see in the photos. If the property has value-adding potential, ensure that this is emphasised. For example, subdivision, granny flat, rent-by-room potential. The written copy is something that you yourself should write and provide to the agent. Do not rely on the agent to write it. That's because no one else knows the property as well as you do. No one else has researched the market like you and knows the competition as well as you. Plus, no one else has as big a vested interest in the property selling as you. Now, it's understandable if you are feeling uncomfortable at this point, and that's natural. But this is a learned skill and something that will not take long to master. The problem with the agent's written copy is that most agents are pumping these out every day, and while you think they should be expert at it, in reality, for many, their creative juices have dried up. Also, agents are time poor and won't give it the attention that it deserves and that you will give it, so just have a go yourself. Regardless of how the written copy comes out, you must look at it through the eyes of a buyer and be confident that it does sell the sizzle and is emotive rather than descriptive. Photo selection. From the professional photography shoot, you should be given a copy of the photos electronically in small to large format. First, you will need to select the pick photo. It's the one you would call the hero shot or the money shot. It's the one that captures the essence of the property the best and presents it in its best light. It may be an inside or an outside photo, but it wants to be one that also, once again, emphasises the lifestyle features of the property. So it may be the living dining photo or the lounge al fresco photo or the pool photo, etc. Once the feature photo is selected, you then want to choose the next best photos and order them accordingly. The order of the photos is very important in your marketing material because you need to capture the buyer's attention, but you also need to hold their attention. So you need the best photos up front. You don't want the laundry or the garage photos within the first half dozen unless there is a Ferrari in the garage. Remember, buyers are flicking through lots of listings on the internet, and so if yours doesn't stand out and keep their interest, they will just move on to the next. Once again, you should be the one selecting the photo order and specifying this in your marketing material. This is because, left to their own devices, sometimes the admin person in the real estate agency will just put the photos up in any order, particularly for the internet ad, and the laundry may end up as the second photo. Just another tip, remember that you do not need to include every photo that the photographer took. Just pick the best and those that show off the property to its full potential. Brochure. Many agents like to have a brochure or flyer produced that they can give to the open for inspections and that they can post out or letterbox drop in the neighbourhood. There is limited space on the brochure, and so choose your photos and words very carefully to ensure they are giving you the biggest bang for your buck. Also, make sure that you double check the proof before authorising it to be printed. It's too late to pick up an error once 150 are printed. Internet ad. As detailed above, you should compile the written copy and do the photo selection and photo order yourself. You will also have to choose the type of internet ad, as they range from premium through to standard, and the pricing differs significantly. Signboard. Out the front of the property, you will have a signboard. At the most basic level, it will be the real estate agent's standard sign. At the other end of the spectrum is a large photo signboard that is purpose designed for your property. It should include your best photos and key text. Ensure that the photos show what you can't see from the street. There is no use having a huge photo of the front of the house when you can simply cast your eye across and see the real thing. Even if it's your money shot, do not do it. Yes, this seems so obvious, but you would be amazed at how many photo signboards there are where this mistake has been made. Start taking notice as you drive around. Floor and site plan. A floor plan shows the layout and configuration of the rooms, and a site plan shows the position of the property on the land. Both can be very useful to include in the internet and brochure marketing material. These plans do not need to be drafted to scale, and often professional photographers have the capacity to create these plans, so ask the question. Video. Depending on the value of the property being sold, you may consider getting video footage of the property to include in the internet ad and website. Videos are becoming less expensive, so talk with the agent to assess if it is of value. Also assess if competing properties use a video to market. Ensure it is done professionally though, because an amateur job can be a major turnoff to buyers. Website. As with the video, a website may or may not be a required marketing tool, depending on the nature of your property, the market, and the competition. The more expensive or unique the property, the more likely a purpose-designed website may be beneficial. For properties being sold off the plan and for larger projects, a website is recommended, as it allows you to present so much more information on the property, the location, and the opportunity. Information memorandum. An information memorandum is like a detailed brochure and is commonly used in marketing to sell properties off the plan, large developments, sites being sold with DA in place, sites with development potential, and commercial property. See the marketing section under selling off the plan for the general contents of the information memorandum. Open for inspections. It is a good idea to include open for inspections into the marketing plan so that people can touch and feel the property. Presentation, presentation, presentation is key. Think about fresh flowers, nice smelling oil, through to removing the family pets for the open period. You want people inspecting to feel at home and comfortable in the space. Consider placing emotive triggers in certain areas too. For example, an old-fashioned red push car in the kids' bedroom and Pooh Bear on the bed. This can catch the kids' attention when inspecting the property. Then when the parents ask the kids which property they liked, you have a better chance of them saying the one with the red push car or the one with the Pooh Bear. There are no guarantees with any of this, and we are just trying to sway the odds in our favour, plus trying to stand out from the crowd. If you have recently built or renovated the property, it can be a great idea to strategically place laminated descriptive notes around the property to explain the features. For example, spotted gum, tongue and groove timber floors, ducted air conditioning throughout with controls in each room and downstairs, so you can adjust the kids' room remotely without having to go upstairs. These notes ensure that you are not relying on the agent to share this information, plus it maintains consistency in information. Another great idea is having a gift-wrapped present sitting on the kitchen bench with a card addressed to the new homeowner. This is a subtle way to catch buyers' attention, stand out from the competition, and to show them that you are a serious seller. Slow to sell. If a property is not selling, you need to ask the question why. The answer can be one of three things, or maybe all three: the price, the property, the selling agent. You need to look objectively at each to remedy the situation. The price. This one is pretty straightforward. If you are overpriced relative to the competition, then a sale will take much longer, or it may not sell at all. So go back and review the market and the competition and adjust your price accordingly. The property. Review the feedback from the agent and whether you can do anything more to the property or anything more to alleviate buyers' issues. For example, if the vacant land is sloping, buyers may be turned off because of the unknown impact on the build cost. In that instance, you could get some actual build costs and indicative plans to provide the agent to give some certainty around this and provide a potential solution to the issue. Maybe you could obtain quotes to retain the site. Maybe the issue is around the poor state of the kitchen, and a way to tackle this is by offering to give the buyer a $5,000 voucher to a cabinet maker to upgrade the kitchen. Educate the agent to market this to buyers as an actual benefit, because it allows the buyer to design the kitchen to their own needs and tastes regarding finishes, etc. If buyers balk at this because of the extra hassle, you could offer to install the kitchen during the conditional period so that it is in for settlement. Again, it's all about being solution-focused and thinking outside the box. The agent. Is the agent doing everything they can to generate inquiries and to convert them to inspections and ultimately a sale? A great idea to help answer this is to pose as a potential buyer and check the agent's response to a phone inquiry. Either call them anonymously yourself or have someone else call them for you and gauge their response. Do they answer the call? If you have to leave a message, do they call back? Are they helpful? Do they answer your questions or avoid them? Are they proactive and follow you up? You could also have someone attend an open house inspection or arrange a private viewing to see how the agent performs. If you are not happy with what you experienced in one or more of these scenarios, then yes, you could put it down to the agent having a bad day. But in reality, you need to address this head on because they may be losing you sales. You also should be revisiting the marketing material and ensuring that it is not missing the mark for some reason. If it is, then change it. Consider changing the marketing material, the order of the photos, the written copy to freshen up the campaign and come from a different perspective. Maybe you need to think a bit more outside the box and explore what more you could do. For example, when selling vacant land, maybe you need to get an artist impression done of the type of house you could build on the site to assist people visualize the end product. Or maybe you could partner up with a builder and market it as a house and land package. Or even better, have the builder market the land to his database of clients. Maybe you could market it directly to builders as a speculative build site, a specy. Negotiation. The art of negotiating is the same whether you are a buyer or a seller. Hence the detail outlined above under buyer negotiation is equally as valid, as is the whole negotiation section of this module. There are, however, a couple of specific points to make with regard to negotiation from a seller's perspective. Timing. Typically the best offer on a property is made within the first month or so. If you knock back offers during this period, ensure that you will not have seller's remorse. It happens time after time where solid offers are knocked back early in the sales campaign, and in hindsight, that was the best offer made. While you would think that you could just go back to the interested buyer down the track and renegotiate, that is not often the case because buyers often move on quickly if they think they have missed out and hence they may no longer be in the market. Try to remain objective and keep the greed factor at check, because it's easy to fall into the trap of believing that a better offer is still to come. Negotiation tools. When negotiating as the seller, it is only limited by your creativity. Some negotiating incentives or strategies you may consider having up your sleeve would include: you pay the buyer's stamp duty. You pay for additional works on the property, for example, install air conditioning, fencing, etc. You pay the buyer's legals. Remember that when it comes to the negotiation, you might discuss with the agent about them coming to the table too and reducing their commission to cut a deal. The technique of meeting in the middle between the buyer's and seller's price is still very valid, and so be mindful of this when counter-offering. A word of caution: try to avoid negotiating verbally. Have the buyer put their offer in writing and make each amendment and counter-offer in writing. This is because otherwise you can spend time getting agreement to something verbally that the buyer then changes their mind on once it gets to putting it on the contract. Sunset clause. As a seller, the sunset clause is something that you want to have in your negotiation toolkit and hence deserves special mention. This clause is relevant when a buyer makes an offer that may not be ideal, but it's the best or only one on the table. For example, maybe the buyer is making their offer subject to the sale of their home or an investment property. You would then counter with the sunset clause, which allows you to accept their offer and hence lock them in, but gives you the power to keep marketing the property. If another buyer comes along with an offer that is more favourable to you, the sunset clause will have a time frame, for example 72 hours, by which time the first buyer either has to choose to go unconditional on the purchase, regardless if they have sold their property or not, or choose to withdraw. The second contract would already be drawn up and subject to the first contract being withdrawn, so that way you are protected. Your solicitor will need to control the contract process to ensure that it is all done legally and that you are not left exposed. Contract and conditional phase. When entering into any contract, time remains very much of the essence, and you should instruct the agent to get the buyer's signature on contract ASAP. If it is an agent sale, they will typically draw up the contract, whereas if it is a private sale, it will be your solicitor that will prepare the contract. As the seller, once you have entered into a contract, both parties have countersigned and it is in the conditional phase, there is not really a lot for you to do, as it's the buyer that needs to complete their due diligence in order to go unconditional on the contract. Things that you should do, though, include valuer inspection. If the contract is subject to finance or valuation, a valuer will contact you to gain access to the property. As the seller, I suggest that you meet the valuer at the property. Take them a copy of the sale contract and rental appraisal, rental statement, if applicable. You will be amazed at how many times a valuer is sent to value a property and they aren't sent a copy of the sale contract and relevant information on the property. Given that you have a sale riding on the good valuation, it's worth the effort to ensure the valuer is as educated as possible about the property. If you have plans of the property, also give a copy to the valuer, because it will save them having to draw a mud map while on site, and they will really thank you for it. Also, provide a list of the features and description of the property. This can be a stock standard list rather than your emotive marketing copy. If the property is recently renovated, include the works done. Do not underestimate the value of this information too. There are a number of recent experiences where the valuer, when left to their own devices, has valued a property as 3 bedrooms when really it was 4. The valuation figure reflected this error and actually jeopardised the sale, because it's a major hassle to try and argue against the valuer and get the bank to reorder the valuation or request its review. It is in your interest to ensure the valuer is on the same page as you from the outset, which is the benefit of you being on site to meet them. If you cannot physically be there, consider providing the information to the real estate agent and have them attend. Also, include in your information your comparable sales research so that they know you are educated and understand the value of the property you are selling. If possible, leave the staging furniture in until after the property has been valued, and ideally until it has gone unconditional, because even a valuer will see the property differently if it's staged and presented well rather than empty or messy. Building and pest inspection. If a building and pest inspection is being done on the property, it is suggested that you attend. This is so that you can answer any potential questions, but also so that you can gauge the inspector's response. If any recent renovation or building works have been completed, furnish the inspector with a copy of the building approval and or any inspection certificates relating to the works. If you know there may be issues with the property, it is often best to be proactive and have them assessed upfront so that you can provide the inspector with his information. For example, if you have obvious cracking in the structural wall, it may be worth having an engineer report to confirm the status of it. If you don't provide supporting info, the inspector is likely to flag it in their report and the buyer may become alarmed by it. At least by being proactive, you are more likely to be able to navigate the buyer through the process. Alternatively, you can do nothing in advance and wait to see what the building inspector says about it and how the buyer reacts and manage it from there. Other contract conditions. Be prepared to provide supporting info if required or requested in relation to other conditions of the contract. For example, development approval information if you are selling with a DA, or plans and building approval information if being sold with a BA, or body corporate information if there is a body corporate involved, or financials if there is a business component, etc. Unconditional phase. Once all conditions set by the buyer have been met or waived and the contract goes unconditional, that is the time to alert your team and get the ball rolling in preparation for settlement, including if you have a mortgage on the property being sold, you need to notify the bank once it's unconditional so that they can get prepared to release the mortgage come settlement. It's suggested that you provide the bank with your solicitor's contacts so the solicitor and bank can liaise directly. Your solicitor will need to obtain the loan payout figure from the bank as settlement approaches. Provide your solicitor with a copy of the most recent council rates and water bill for the property and the body corporate bill and statement if applicable, so that they can calculate the settlement figures and make the appropriate adjustments. Also provide them direction on which bank account or accounts to deposit the balance funds from settlement. If you have a property manager, notify them in writing that you are selling the property and if required, provide them the sufficient notice required to terminate your management agreement with them, for example, 30 days. If the tenant is to remain in place, you may want to give the property manager the buyer's contact details to liaise with regarding ongoing management. Check with the buyer first if they want their details passed on. Settlement. The final stage of selling is to prepare for and undertake settlement, including prepare the property for settlement, that is, vacate if it's being sold as vacant possession. While there is no legal requirement to leave the property sparkling clean, it is courteous to at least give it a clean over for the new owners. Also, locate any remotes that stay with the property, for example, air conditioning, and any warranty documents or instruction manuals that may be of benefit to leave for the new owner, for example, for the dishwasher, the pool pump, etc. For any chattels or other items that are noted in the contract to stay as settlement, ensure they are present as specified in the contract. Provide all keys for the property and garage door remotes to the solicitor to be able to hand over at settlement. Assuming you have an electricity account for the property, request a final read done on the meter and have the account closed a day after settlement. That at least gives the buyer a night's grace to change over the account into their own name. Notify your solicitor in advance if you are going to be away leading up to settlement, because it is essential that they can contact you over this period. Once the solicitor has the draft settlement statement prepared, request a copy and review it carefully to ensure that correct adjustments have been made, including deposit, rates, water, body corporate if applicable, etc. Once you have had confirmation from your solicitor that settlement is complete, then contact the insurance company to have your insurance on the property cancelled.